Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Anthony Anderson and Chris Dudley, and Democrats Dan Johnson and John McDonough. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. That's where we archive all of the programs. So if you miss it a week, you can go right to the website and see what you missed. 1-800-723-8289. The next couple of hours, we're going to be assessing what transpired last week in Charlotte. We'll be comparing that to what happened in Tampa the week before and how the campaign looks from this point moving forward to November, talking about some key races in the battleground states. And also, we're going to be talking about what happened, big news basically breaking today. Mitt Romney, who has not done many of the Sunday shows, he was on Meet the Press today with David Gregory, and he made some news because one of the issues that came up was Obamacare. He has said, of course, the elimination of Obamacare is one of the things he wants to do on his first day in office. And so that subject came up today, and this is what Mitt Romney had to say, quote, in talking about that he's not going to get rid of everything, however. He said, of course, there are a number of things I like in health care reform that I'm going to put in place. One is to make sure that those with pre-existing conditions can get coverage. Two is to assure that the marketplace allows for individuals to have policies that cover their family up to whatever age that might be. And then he goes on to say, I say we're going to replace Obamacare, and I'm replacing it with my own plan. And even in Massachusetts when I was governor, our plan there deals with pre-existing conditions and young people. So that's what Mitt Romney had to say today. Anthony Anderson, you are a Republican. You're one of our two Republicans tonight. You've been a lukewarm supporter of Mitt Romney in the past. You were for Rick Perry initially. What's your reaction to what he had to say on Meet the Press? Is that sort of etch-a-sketch? Is he about to reinvent himself again?
I don't think it's etch-a-sketch, but it's sort of reinvented himself. I mean, if you compare his plan in Massachusetts to the plan that President Obama has, Obama pretty much mirrored what was done in Massachusetts, and he just brought it on a national scale. And now that Mitt's come out of the bag and said, hey, listen, I like the Obama plan, but I'm just going to massage it a little bit. I'm going to make it look like what
well,
I want it to
he
look
didn't,
like.
He didn't say he liked the Obama
he
plan.
He liked certain aspects of
Do
the plan.
Do you like certain aspects of the plan?
Well, I haven't really thought about it in depth in terms of the Obamacare, but anytime that there's pre-existing conditions and they need to be covered, yes, of course, I would agree with something like
Dan
that.
Dan Johnson Weinberg. Dan Johnson joins us. Dan, what was your assessment of Romney? Is it the remaking of the issue, the reframing of the issue?
I think it's that.
Or was it obvious?
Well, it's obvious. The Republican position to repeal Obamacare is becoming such a weight as people start to learn more and more about the laws that the most obvious things like getting rid of a lifetime cap on insurance policies or requiring somebody with any pre-existing condition to get coverage, the idea that we're going to take that away from people is now so toxic that the standard bearer of the Republican Party has to walk away from his own party platform and say, well, now.
But during, now but during like the it. Congressional debates, there were Republicans that were saying there were certain aspects of health care reform that they did like, and they happened to be the two things that Mitt Romney referenced today. Christine Dudley is our other Republican tonight. Your reaction to Romney today, and is it likely to maybe cause some ruffles or some rumbles within the more conservative elements of the party?
I think that it was very consistent to what Romney has been talking about and the philosophy that he has on this particular issue. The repeal really comes in the implementation and the cost components. And the fact that, you know, we rammed through how many pages was the health care plan and Nancy Pelosi's famous statement, well, let's just get it passed and then we'll read it. I think we have to dismantle it. I think he's showing leadership. He's showing what he does well is that there is a problem, so you find a solution. And you study the data. And in the data, I think we all around this table, Anthony included, have, you know, the American public does believe that pre-existing condition is an area that has to be focused on. And more importantly, when we come back to the cost component and fair market, I think that is one of the bigger complaints about this is that it's just all being wrapped up in a government program as opposed to having some market elements to it.
John McDonough, other Democrat this evening, your response to Romney's discussion on Meet the Press today, which obviously I think is probably going to get a lot of coverage tomorrow and for the next 7 days.
My response was more to Gregory, the moderator. I thought he missed the obvious follow-up question, which was once Romney said he wanted to keep the pre-existing conditions, that was the point where Gregory said, well, how do you propose to finance the pre-existing conditions, because only by spreading the risk among the totality of the population are insurance companies going to be able to insure people with pre-existing conditions. And that question wasn't asked.
So where does it go from here? I mean, is this – was that answer significant enough for independents who are hearing it and senior citizens from hearing it to give them a level of confidence? Christine.
Well, I think that that is exactly the case. And again, I go back to the whole market value of the all the market discussion on this combined with government, looking at data, finding solutions. And I think there are many more elements that will be rolled out as it relates to the healthcare component, including tort reform, including, having the opportunity to have insurance negotiated across state lines. What we're finding in looking at the implementation of this is the costs are just so.
But just what I'm saying, without getting into the specifics, because I think what's going to happen now is, does this major appearance on Meet the Press, does that not give what I'm going to describe as the moderate wing of the Republican Party or the establishment wing, doesn't that give them the words to be used in commercials in trying to ease and give relief to some people who think that Romney is going to
absolutely
pull all
it looks as though it's a benefit that Romney's not appearing to take away from someone. So under those circumstances, I think that most people will take some solace in this decision that he's made today on Meet the Press.
So, but he's going to run into the same problem about financing. How do you finance a system that's covers pre-existing conditions without spreading the risk pool?
Well, that brings up the next question: is can you have that sort of a serious discussion about where it gets funded from? Because again, people will ask him for more specifics,
right? Sure.
And then they'll ask the president for specifics.
Well, look, the president's in
nobody wants to give specifics in campaigns.
Well,
nobody.
Look, here's the problem that Mitt Romney's in. Right, the president, Obamacare has been implemented. We can look at it. We see their successes, which now Governor Romney's trying to claim that he's not going to take away. The problem is the Republican Party said, get rid of it all. Get rid of it all. And he's now faced with these two different forces, saying repeal it all, and the other is saying,
but I'm not as bad as those guys.
But
here's the point. It's very difficult for the Democratic Party now, with all the placards that said, forward, forward, forward. They should all be talking about the future and forward, not blaming George Bush, not blaming the Republican Congress. If there's dollars to be had, let's have Obama tell everybody about it. Back shortly. From Terre Haute, Indiana to Texarkana, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Want to get your reaction not only to what Mitt Romney had to say today on Meet the Press, but also reaction to the Democratic Convention. I think most people would suggest, at least as far as the media coverage is concerned, last week on this program, we were debating whether Mitt Romney gave even one of the top three best speeches at the convention. I think probably there would be some people that would say that maybe Barack Obama didn't even give one of the best three speeches at that convention. I think just as Ann Romney stole the show in Tampa, I mean, Michelle Obama gave one of the dramatic speeches. I think a far more effective speech than the president did at last week's convention. Do you agree with that, John?
No, not really. I mean, I... I mean, I'm a Democrat, so I see the Democratic convention as having really outdone the Republican convention in everything that it intended to do. Now, that might be the expected position, but I've noticed in some of the commentaries.
Well, they had different. They
had
different.
That there
goals.
Seems to be a consensus about the success of the Democrats, not only among people like myself, but Britt Hume and people like that. They say they did it.
But my question to you is, we are so accustomed to the president hitting a grand slam home run. I mean, he did not hit a grand slam home run in that. I think that was barely a double as a speech. Don't you agree?
Well, I don't know. I think he did as well as he's done before. But I think we've seen him hit home runs before. So we're less impressed when he does it again and again and again.
Do you think he hit a home run in that speech?
Oh, I think it was an excellent speech.
I thought there were two.
You think he hit a home run in that speech?
I thought it was great. There was the one speech that for me for the base.
Oh, come on,
see here,
come on, folks,
to the base when he said
just the five of us.
When
okay?
he
come on,
the last
he
10
said,
minutes maybe.
It, when he said. Yeah, no, the first half, it took some time to go. But that second half, when he started, on foreign policy, he just demolished Mitt Romney, demolished it. But then for the base, when he said, that little girl in Tampa who got a new heart, who otherwise wouldn't have without that Affordable Care Act, I didn't do that. You did that. The base, those of us that worked so hard to elect Barack Obama and get the Democrats so we could pass the Affordable Care Act, that was like the best excitement I haven't been so fired up all year, and I've been paying attention and getting involved. That line, you did that, echoed three times, was phenomenal.
Well, maybe I'm looking at it more as a performance than as a document.
It was just an amped up version of a regular speech that he normally gives on a consistent
even
basis.
Even more like almost like a State of the Union recitation
right.
speech.
Right.
Well, not
I
mean,
a, to
me,
to
he's
me
a very
a,
he's a,
to me it was not the guy of Denver.
No.
Or the campaign with the soaring rhetoric and the aspirations. It was well delivered. It wasn't
absolutely,
horrible.
Absolutely.
It was well delivered, but it was basically, it was a political attack. And this was the guy that didn't want to get involved in political attacks. It was a completely different tone than 4 years ago.
But in Denver, we were still discovering who this guy was. We were still discovering who this guy was. And so there was a sense of freshness.
Well, now America knows who the guy is.
Of course. So there's less to discover.
But I think the whole DNC, all the speeches that I saw and read about and heard about, especially those that were tucked away during the day, just filled with vitriol. I mean, there was lots and lots of over-the-top vitriol.
Absolutely.
And maybe it's to fire up the base because the base has been a little... there's been that whole conversation about, wait a minute, don't despair. We're really with you. And I think that the vitriol, what was with Jennifer Granholm? I mean, she was like, channeling Dick Gregory or something. I mean, flailing about and talking street talk. And I just found
Susan Flake.
Yes, and also
Susan Fluke. It was
so base driven, and it was the vitriol was a little bit over the top, as opposed to Bill Clinton, who gave this interesting. I mean, I thought the speech from just somebody who loves politics and history and all of that, it was vintage Clinton. But if you step back and listen to what he had to say, it was almost a repudiation of Obama in some respects. One hand, he articulated the mission better than I think Obama, the president, did. But kind of underlying that, look what I did when I was president.
Well, let me react. That's what I was about to get to. Now that he's president, now he has a record to speak of. Why didn't he bring that up more during the convention than Bill Clinton and his years in office? What happened? What happened to President Obama at the speech?
Oh, let me react to that. What was so phenomenal about President Clinton's speech is he laid out clearly how Democratic administrations have generated far more private sector job growth than Republican administrations. Comparison that was so apt is Clinton's speech saying, hey, look, last 20, 25 years, look at what we've done, higher job growth. And then when President George W. Bush gave his speech talking about, hey, look at what we've – oh, wait, I forgot. That's right. President George W. Bush didn't speak at the convention because the apt comparison between, well, we've seen what Obama did. Let's look at the last 25 years of what type of presidential administrations have done. We've seen. That was the comparison.
Anthony, and then I want to respond.
Here's what I'm looking at from this perspective. Here's a country with the most powerful country on the face of this planet right now. You have over close to 350 million Americans. You have a $15 trillion GDP. And an unemployment rate of 8.1%. You have 47 million Americans on some sort of food stamp assistance, and he creates 96,000 jobs a month, and he's the best thing since sliced bread. He has a record. Why not talk about your record?
Which he did.
Over the past 4 years. No.
Very successfully.
Over his record for the last 4 years.
No, again, if you've got a bad record, you don't want to talk about
that. But hold on.
But he did.
It's a great record. Prior to him becoming president, this man had no record to speak of.
Yeah. Who has a great record?
Obama. You want to compare Obama's record to Bush's record?
Absolutely.
I mean, come on.
What is it about Democrats? You can't – your signs say forward and your eyes are fixed on the rearview mirror.
Because –
you know what? You're going to go off a cliff looking through that rearview mirror, blaming George Bush
for
everything.
It's not. It's the policy difference. You have to – look, the question is, right?
Wait,
where are you better off than you were 4 years ago? That's the question, right?
What's your answer to that?
Absolutely. Our economy was an
absolute – are you better off?
We were an absolute free
fall. Definitely, I'm better off. Better off?
Seriously.
Are you better off?
Not with taxes.
Well, I mean, are you better off?
This is not better off.
Wait a minute. Wait. Objectively, tax rates are less than they were in 2008 under the American Recovery Act. The tax rates are lesser. There's been no increase in taxes. That's just an objective fact.
But there has been
350,000 Americans who quit looking for work. That says a lot. That says a lot when you have 350,000 Americans stop looking for work because there's no work.
My point about forward, and as you say, George Bush didn't go to the convention because people think he's a political liability, and yet
the policies, and yet
the Obama administration and the planners of the convention, they've got to look backward to bring in Bill Clinton to prop up whose rhetoric between the two of them in the camp. Did any of the networks play any of the things that these guys said about each other in the primary 4 years ago?
But what about
when they were dealing with, you know, who was playing a race card? Bill Clinton walks out there. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like giving.
It was
you
a
know,
calculated risk. By
it was
the
a calculated
campaign.
Risk. But the point is, I mean, here is, you know, what was unique about
it? But to Clinton's point.
And by the way, he is a great. I agree with Chris. He is a great orator. He's a great showman. But the point is, you have to bring back Bill Clinton to prop up the President of the United States, and no one even mentioned that it's
you don't
the
number one
who was impeached.
Number
the
one,
guy was impeached. He was disbarred. I mean, he's got everything. Let's give him 45 minutes to talk.
But to his credit, he said, "Look it." He appointed as vice president. He put a team of rivals administration. A guy who ran against him for president, he picked him as his vice president.
That's a good idea.
Right? Everybody.
Nobody,
a guy,
so that's great. Right?
That's all
right?
Good stuff.
So your
no
point
problem.
Now is like, what about this divisive primary? Well, Obama is inclusive. Three Republican cabinet members, right? He appointed Hillary, a bunch of Hillary supporters to his cabinet. Your point is maybe Bill Clinton should have been there because they had a tough primary.
Three Republican cabinet members.
Yeah, right.
Who?
Transportation.
I'm sorry, you're right. I don't know who the other two are, but yes, you're right.
All I'm saying is that if the focus of the convention is forward, I'd like to know why the Democrats spend so much time looking in the rearview mirror, blaming George Bush, completely ignoring the fact that for the first 2 years, the president could have done anything that he wanted to do, and he wasn't able to get anything accomplished, and he doesn't have a budget passed in the Senate because they won't vote for
all
it.
Political
and the
parties,
question is about
groups.
Leadership.
I think here's why it's not fair, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think it's not blaming George Bush. I think it's laying out the choice before us. Do we want to go forward on the policies that have created more private sector jobs that we done under Obama and done under Clinton? Or do we want to go under this government is always bad policies under George Bush and Obama that are similar?
There you go. You're mentioning the Bush thing again.
Because of the same policies.
If it's about the future, why don't you be specific about Romney plans? He has papers written on a variety of things. Go after him on the papers. I mean, the only thing they're going after him is the fact that he's a wealthy guy.
Because
that's
look, the congressional Republicans matter, right? It's not these aren't two people in isolation.
Okay,
these are political parties,
let's
right?
Let's do that point. One of the things that Bill Clinton articulated in his speech and to my earlier point was, look at me. I got all this done with Republican leadership. Look at President Obama. And if you take it to the next step, President Obama has not been able to work with the leadership.
He
doesn't reach out because he doesn't have the same kind of attitude toward the cooperative working, because we're right, and nobody wants to come to the middle, but it's the president who has that leadership.
We have got to stop. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we'll start to take calls. Thanks for joining us tonight. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Our Democrats this evening, Dan Johnson joins us. He is a progressive lobbyist for a variety of entities, also a graduate of the University of Chicago, where his college professor in law was Barack Obama. And he reports that he got a good grade, so he's a standard bearer for progressive causes. John McDonough also joins us. He is a longtime writer. He writes frequently, or his work appears frequently on National Public Radio, where he does also a great job of covering media and politics of media. But he's also a card-carrying Democrat this evening, if there indeed are card-carrying Democrats. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are many. Also joining us this evening is Anthony Anderson. He works in juvenile justice in the state of Illinois when he's not talking about politics, and he's with the Republican Precinct organization.
Yes.
He wants to put a Republican Precinct captain in every precinct in the state of Illinois.
Absolutely.
Because there is not one in every precinct in the state. And Christine Dudley also joins us, a longtime executive director of the Illinois State Republican Party, also active in national politics, working for the first Bush campaign. And also, you had an interesting job at the Republican convention. You were charged by the RNC to keep an eye on Newt Gingrich. Is that?
No, that's not fair.
A leash? What were you?
No.
A muzzle?
Oh, my goodness. Not even close.
With?
No. What I was asked to do, and I was delighted to do, and it worked out quite nicely, is Speaker Gingrich had an idea to put together workshops every day for the delegates to do a deeper policy dive, a wonkish, which is those of you who have covered or followed Speaker Gingrich, that really is his expertise. And in fact, in 1984, he did a similar thing at the Dallas Convention. And I was brought in to help coordinate that, to help facilitate it and produce it, if you will. It wasn't just the speaker. It was a wide swath of speakers throughout the week each day. On the first day, Scott Walker addressed the group. On Wednesday, we had a very robust discussion about energy, which included everyone from Senator Hoeven of North Dakota talking about the North Dakota story.
So does Newt really, like, in your conversations with Newt, did he say anything about Romney that you can share with just the five of us?
I think one of the directives that he gave to all of us who are working as a team together on this is that he wanted to make sure that the directive was, it was A, not about him, and B, that it was about the Ryan Romney plan. And he was very, very particularly keen on the vice presidential choice.
I want to ask you a question. And again, this is back a couple of weeks, but because you're inside Republican politics and you're at the convention, what was the general reaction from the professional pals to Chris Christie's speech?
You know, it was fine.
Not good, but
it was. I didn't hear one. I mean, there wasn't a lot of chatter about it afterwards. To be honest, I mean, I think the pundits did, but it wasn't the expectation was not met.
Did it help build his future?
I thought maybe it was missing some substance, sort of like the social issues. Immigration, the war in Afghanistan.
It was about him.
Yeah, it was more of him, and I was looking more of substance issues.
And there were a lot of speeches in our convention. I thought one of the best speeches was Susana Martinez from New Mexico.
Absolutely,
the governor of New Mexico.
Absolutely. One of the top three.
She really was. I mean, I don't know that there was an expectation there. But boy, I mean, you're standing on the floor and listening Romney. To that, Ann Romney was phenomenal. And that's the other thing, and the stories about the people who had been impacted by Mitt Romney and the help that he'd given them, I thought those were really, really compelling and well executed. But then you juxtapose that to the DNC where you had literally, and I'm reading this in Steve Huntley's column today because I did not see it, Steve Huntley being a Sun-Times columnist here in Chicago, where apparently the head of the California delegation compared Nikki Haley to Eva Braun. I mean, this is the kind of vitriol that gets
I don't think the networks carry that in trouble.
Yeah,
I didn't
you know,
hear about
both
that.
Democrats and Republicans.
A lot of things get said in conversation.
And also, you know, talking about Nazis, and it just, you know, that doesn't do us any of us any good.
I'm not sure Steve Huntley is the most objective source out
no,
there.
No, but this is a damn. But let me quoting, ask you. He's quoting Christine, a basis
Christine
of fact.
Christine Dudley, one of our Republicans, she said that the speech, that Clinton's speech, she gave it praise as a political document, being a political junkie. Now, can our Democrats say anything about the Republican convention that you thought was a plus?
I thought they humanized Mitt Romney. I thought they did an excellent job. I mean, he seems like. I mean, I think he's come across as the sort of, you know, plastic, inauthentic
etch-a-sketch. Didn't you think those stories were compelling?
I thought the human side of Mitt Romney really came out.
The quietness of how he helped these families who were in distress.
I thought they did a good job on that.
Yeah, that too. But here's the thing. You say it sort of humanized him. In what way? I mean, did you think he was not human when you were looking at him before on television?
No, I think he's been perceived to be among the most inauthentic political figures of the last six
Mitt
years.
I think Mitt Romney has always been authentic. He's always been a person who is more about, you know, an image that he's trying to uphold. I don't think that it was like he was a phony or a fake or anything like that. I've never thought that he was a phony or fake in that way. But I don't think he was ever
approachable.
I think the big story about the Republican convention was all the, you know, bold-faced lies that were stated on the platform.
That is true.
I heard Rance Priebus. Rance Priebus.
Was that the nice thing you were saying?
I heard
that was the nice thing.
He agreed with me, right? Wow.
See, this is my point.
I think that was the big story that came out of the convention.
But I think there was either of you. Absolutely, positively sit here tonight and say that you believe in compromise unless it is what you believe in.
Rance Priebus's speech there, and I began to think to myself, he was talking about the, you know, I built it, you know, you didn't. And I'm thinking, he's riffing on this for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and I'm thinking to myself, he's building his entire speech on an obvious falsehood, on a misquote of the president. That the president referred to is not the your own business; it's the infrastructure. And so it was a total misquote. It was feet of clay.
We have lots of callers. Let's go to Eduardo, listening to us on our flagship station WLS 890 in Chicago. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's great to be on this show.
Thanks.
Yeah, I have a cousin who's unemployed. He's in IT. I wonder why Mr. Obama's not campaigning near Cape Canaveral. You know, all those people lost their jobs, you know.
Well, he'll be campaigning in Florida. I mean, that's one of the
things. But I think his point is that the extension of NASA funding was taken out.
Well, NASA funding, the whole military-industrial complex, is in a way a kind of, 21st century WPA. It provides jobs for highly skilled people.
So then the question is to the caller, do you think we ought to be cutting government spending even more, as I think it's very fair to say that's the Romney-Ryan plan, so that more NASA workers can get laid off? Or does the caller think that we ought to be keeping Americans at work doing amazing things like sending, you know, an SUV to the planet Mars?
A good part of the unemployment today is public
employment.
What do you think? That's right.
What
do you think?
And we should get rid of all the troops overseas. How about that?
You mean bring them home, not get rid of them?
Bring them home, right.
Okay.
Right. That's a clear.
Well, I think the Democrats want to do that. Let's move on to Brian and Roselle, also listening to us on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce. Enjoy the show. I'm an independent, but I did watch a lot of both conventions, and I kept hearing these speeches about American workers, American jobs, American business. The problem is both parties have participated in this globalization of the economy. And in my opinion, and I think the facts back me up, a lot of what is killing the American working class, those of us with high school educations and less, is globalization, free trade. If I remember right, I think Bill Clinton was the one that passed NAFTA. And Bill Clinton was the one that deregulated Wall Street and the banks,
yes.
If I remember correctly.
He didn't bring that up, though.
Democrats don't like – I can't understand these Democrats that aren't as Bill Clinton spell. He is such a BS artist, but nobody looks at what he really did. And, you know, the whole problem with our recession right now in our economy is demand. The American workers have had the crap kicked out of them. They have no money, so they can't buy anything. 70% of our economy is consumer demand. Two-thirds of the people in this country don't have a college degree, and their standard of living is being driven down by globalization, free trade, you know, which both parties think is a great idea.
Well, when Barack Obama was campaigning for the primary in Ohio, he talked about seriously looking at rewriting NAFTA. To my knowledge, it's never been done. He talked about it in Youngstown and campaigning in Mahoning County, and I don't think he ever did it.
Well, to the caller's point, I think the Republicans clearly have been a more aggressive advocate of ever more, you know, corporate-backed trade agreements. Bill Clinton objectively did say, well, I agree with that. I'm going to join with the traditional Republican platform. But to the caller's point, there haven't been nearly as many global free trade agreements under the Obama administration as there were attempts under the Bush administration.
But NAFTA did not create the jobs. So when you look at what the debate was then and who was leading the charge, it was a combination of Republicans.
That's right.
But those who pushed it over the top, including Rahm Emanuel, Bill Daley, working for the new president, Bill Clinton.
No question.
They pushed it over the top.
All our former presidents supported it. A whole litany of secretaries of state supported it. I mean,
the only person that spoke against it was Ross Perot, who said the giant sucking sound was the jobs going south, and the jobs have gone south.
There have been a lot of
1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. There's been discussions as whether there was a bump, a non-bump, whether or not the job numbers, which weren't very good for the incumbent party, what effect they're going to have on the campaign. I think the most important thing for everybody to understand now is the national polls that are just putting everybody in one big, you know, pot and disseminating that to the public. They really don't mean much anymore. It's really all about the various states where the Electoral College will determine who the next president of the United States is. And at the moment, there's about 8 states that most parties would agree are the swing states, the battleground states. Let's take a look at where those polls look right now. This, according to Real Clear Politics, as of today, the 2012 battleground states, there's 8 of them. In all 8 states, Obama currently has a slight lead. In Ohio, it's 47-45.5. In Florida, it's 48.5-46.8. In Colorado, 48.7-45.3. In Virginia, 47.3-46.7. In Wisconsin, even Wisconsin that has Paul Ryan on the ticket, Obama is leading at 48.2-46.8. In North Carolina, it's 47.3-45.3. 48.3 in New Hampshire for Obama, 44.8. And in Iowa, it's 45.0 plus 44.8 for Romney. Now, again, Real Clear Politics averages polls. So these are averages of polls in the 8 states. And again, Obama is leading in all of them, but they're all within the margin of error. So I guess my question to you, Christine Dudley, you've looked at these polls for a long time. We clearly have a dead heat. Is there anybody that has an edge? Can you objectively look at these states and say, let me just throw one subject out. because of the flap over Jerusalem at the Democratic convention, the way that was so
ham-handed,
yeah, in a by Mayor Villarosa. Does that give the possibility that maybe there could be a Jewish backlash against the president in a state that has a very large?
Well, I know that there was a tremendous amount of energy in the Jewish community, the activist Jewish community, over, and I don't think that it would have been accomplished. I mean, the fact that it ended up even going for a vote and was removed from the platform in the first place was very ham-handed, and then somebody caught it. And but I don't know that it's going to increase in any of these states the Jewish population, with the absence of, I'm just looking at your list here, probably Ohio has some pockets of, and in the remainder of the states. So from that standpoint, I think there has been, again, some disappointment within a coalition, a higher degree of disappointment. And I think that's one of the things that the Obama campaign is battling, is the degree of energy and the disappointment that people have had over the watching these 4 years.
Well, also, most of the time, people don't really care too much on either side. I mean, it's been a long, long time since platforms have been important. But it seems to me that in this particular case, it was the obvious change of the platform on the advice of the president or order of the president.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, again, even objectively, Dan, I mean, Mayor Villarosa, that was an absolute embarrassment the way that was handled. And how on earth do you have a two-thirds voice vote? Who came up with that idea? Three times.
The power is in the gavel, and it's what he decides. And Sam Rayburn would have known that. The mayor of Los Angeles.
But he mishandled it.
Well,
right?
He was not experienced.
But did
at
he
that.
Mishandle it?
Yes, of course he mishandled it. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But again, is
did
it,
he mishandle it, or was that the voice of those at the convention? Because if you think about it,
yeah,
a lot of those people at the end of the vote were still booing. Yeah. I mean, they were booing, and it was a loud, boisterous boo,
well,
as if to say, hey, listen, we don't like what was just done. Either way.
I would say this. I think people kind of have, it's a little unfair because people say, oh, conventions are so boring. What's the point? It's all spectacle. And then when you have a little internal democracy where people kind of disagree about something, people say, oh, it's so ham-handed.
That wasn't insight into the way those people think. I mean, they wanted to leave God out of their own platform. That was an insight into their psyche. That's what was important to me when I heard the whole thing. That's what was the most that resonated with me. It's like, hold on, you guys get up and you sing the Pledge of Allegiance. You say this, you say that, and then when we want to mention the word God, you feel reprehensible about the whole thing.
It was in context. There was God-given rights.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it wasn't.
But still, I mean, but still, Bruce.
It wasn't a real overt.
But the question of Jerusalem, I think, was more profound because it played into the narrative of that this administration isn't pro-Israel.
Right.
I mean, it gave the other side, again, the doubt, and the Jewish community, as I said, was very riled up from the emails I saw, because why was this even a question, and why wasn't it, the idea? And Dan, you're right. There was maybe some democracy going on there, but the party has been so favorable to the Jewish community, and the majority of the money that has gone from the Jewish community into Democratic coffers, I've got to believe that there were some very profound Jewish contributors who caught this and made a few phone calls.
I don't think there's any difference between the Republican and Democrats on Israel. I think the Democrats' credentials with Israel and the Israeli government are solid.
Why are some Jews upset with President Obama?
I don't know. I can't look into the mind of an individual Jewish voter. But I can tell you this. Well, wait a minute. Let me finish the point.
We're going to finish the point in the next segment because we're running out of time.
Okay.
If you're watching us on television, you can only imagine what the point is. But if you're listening to us,
it's a good one. It's a good one.
Coast, you're going to hear that point when we continue. 1-800-723-8289. To all the callers that are on the line, I promise you, my campaign pledge to you, we'll take your calls when we come back for the second hour on radio. And if you're watching us on television, see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republicans Anthony Anderson and Christine Dudley, and Democrats Dan Johnson and John McDonough. Phone lines open at 1-800-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Toll-free numbers. And if you'd like to send us an email message, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. And in the last hour, in case you just tuned in, John McDonough was just about to make a very pithy point, and we had to say farewell to those who are listening to us, but now they're hopefully all back. So first of all, for those that have just joined us in the last 5 minutes, set up what you're about to give the final answer to.
We were discussing the Democratic convention kind of faux pas over the Israeli plank in the platform.
Yes.
And
big mistake.
The issue of Jerusalem. My understanding is that plank favors the future – that the future capital of Israel be Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it makes a distinction between West Jerusalem and East Jerusalem, but the whole issue of Jerusalem is a controversy that is entitled to some discussion on its merits, as opposed to when Mitt Romney went to Israel and pronounced Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel. There is not a you know how many embassies there are in Jerusalem right now? None. No country in the world recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. All the embassies are in Tel Aviv or in the areas surrounding Tel Aviv.
That's a fair point.
And when Mitt Romney went there and essentially said this is the capital of Israel, that was a faux pas. That was a deep policy faux pas.
Was it fair to say on the Republican side that what I felt was the strongest indictment by the president of his opponent is the foreign policy amateur, you know, sense from the Romney campaign?
It got the biggest line.
Yeah,
the biggest
but is that? Line. But on the merits, is that a fair point?
I just don't. I don't think that foreign policy is the strong suit for the Republicans this year, as it has been in other years, because of this. Because primarily of the Osama bin Laden killing. I mean, that's plus killing and dismantling, you know, much of the leadership of Al Qaeda. I mean, and they get a very fair assessment of that. And it's I don't think the Republicans are weak on national defense. It's
not
just the Republicans finally have something they can wave their banner
and
say,
listen,
we're tough.
Choices made at our convention to focus on jobs in the economy.
Well,
jobs
one of the reasons is that
reintroducing Mitt Romney to the larger national stage.
And the jobs numbers. What about the jobs numbers? I mean, did that not get the coverage that job numbers, again, more bad job numbers?
Well, that came after the convention,
right? I know it came afterwards, but did
sure,
it step on the convention?
Sure, it got fair coverage.
It was sort of fair. I mean, but then you had the decrease in the unemployment rate, too, so it was sort of a mixed bag. So, I mean, that's the way I looked at it.
For every job.
Yeah.
Started though four people, as you talked about in the last hour, people who have just given up.
Let's go to Darlene in Long Grove, Illinois. She's joining us on our flagship station. How are things in Long Grove?
Very nice, thank you.
How's the chocolate fudge up there in the fudge shops?
You guys ought to come up and help the poor communities up here.
Okay.
Contribute to all the small businesses up here.
Well, I have contributed to my share of fudge shops over the years, as is obvious.
Well, I usually go up there for the apple cider.
See, my question is, why is the media such a hypocrite? See, in 2008, Obama's plan was hope and change. Now when Romney's running, everyone wants something in detail. No one's bothered to read Wall Street Journal when he laid out his 59-point plan, or have gone on his website to take a look at a plan. And if anyone, one of my biggest complaints about all the analysts out there is none of you guys have run a business. My husband and I have. And when you run a business, until you know all the facts, you can't sit there and put out a game plan. Therefore, you guys are asking Romney put out points without he knowing exactly what he's dealing with. He's put out.
Well, but I think what we're dealing with in a campaign, the person who is running for president and is the challenger never has the amount of information that the person who is the president has.
Absolutely.
On foreign policy and economic issues. What we have here, however, is we have someone who is a challenger who at least has a history of an awareness of fiscal and business and economic related issues, running now against a president who now has policies that he must defend and want to expand because he has a record. And there is a clear difference between the two men of what they want to do. I think the one thing that I think each party has said that I totally agree with is the country can be different depending on who is elected. There can be a significant, which I frankly think is good for the country, that we have a robust debate. That's why I'm really looking forward to the debates, because I think the debates are going to give everyone an opportunity to really see the two visions of America that each of these men articulate.
But again, back to my point. What the media doesn't ask the same question of hope and change. They only listen to his words. Oh, he's gonna do this, and he's filled with hope and change. And if we elect Romney, there's gonna be disaster. Oh my God, it's hope and change.
No, but I think the one thing they're asking for Romney, which I think is a good question, and that is, you know, he's going to build up the defenses, he's going to reduce the deficit, and he's not going to raise taxes. I mean, there's a lot of people, even Republicans, that say, wait a minute, can you do all of those things? Now, what I would say from a political standpoint, that is exactly what Ronald Reagan said. And people said, there's no way that Ronald Reagan can do that. Well, Ronald Reagan ran up a lot of deficits. So you know what? Maybe you can't do it. But Ronald Reagan also strengthened the military, helped bring down the Iron Curtain, and it was on his watch. Then the Soviet Union collapsed. So, but again, there was a price. He didn't get the third thing that he promised. He didn't reduce the deficit. And so the question now, I think, is I think Romney is trying to basically play Reagan's card
right.
in his run for the White House.
And if you take a look at Obama's speech at the inauguration there the other day, it was not much hope, but he always wanted to make some changes and move forward.
At
the nominating convention, he didn't talk much about hope because he knows now that he has a record to speak of, and so he left that out. We're just going to be changing and moving forward as opposed to moving up to what Romney has to offer.
No, he talked about hope at the beginning, but he said that
whole theme of hope and change, it's changed its tone a little bit now.
Well,
it's not the hope and change of 2008
well,
for
he
sure.
acknowledged that clearly. He said
okay,
America.
That's what I'm saying.
But the caller was trying to say that
the media is not talking more about hope and change. The reason why they're not talking about it because Obama's not talking about it the way he was talking about it back in 08. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Hope and change got him a long way.
It absolutely
1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to hear from California, Austin, Texas, and Alabama. Back shortly.
Also the first
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for being with us. During the break, John McGunnett was making a point about businessmen running for president. Make the point. It was a very good one.
Well, the point is that Mitt Romney is the first person ever to seek the office of president who is putting his credentials as a businessman as the lead reason why he should get the nomination.
What do you make of it?
What I make of it is that he is... I don't think being a businessman is necessarily a credential to lead the country.
Because you're a Democrat.
No, it's because when you're – no, it's it can be. It depends. I mean, Wilkie ran for president. He was a businessman. He was an industrialist in utilities, and he was fairly progressive. He would not be – he wasn't even welcome at the Republican convention in 1944. But I think when you're a businessman, your primary purpose is to serve your stockholders and the private interests of the welfare of your business. And when you're in politics, you grow up with an entirely different point of view of what the public interest is.
But when you have
a transition from the go ahead.
When you have what is perceived by many voters, a bloated, mismanaged, inefficient government, what's wrong with turning to someone whose skill sets, in a business sense, deals with those things?
Well, the business community,
and by the way, in this particular case, it isn't just his skill sets at Bain. It's his, he was the governor for 4 years of a state, and one of the major things he did in that state, you know, is he's now being criticized for, which is Romney Massachusetts Romney Care,
yeah,
which he basically
insurance
came
reform.
Back to a little bit today. So I'm wondering, you know, it's an interesting point about why America's never turned to a businessman. But I guess my question to you is it because maybe in this particular case, Romney is such an incredibly successful businessman that he's able to do something that
well,
no one
has
done?
Well, he has
years in
his
country?
His name has deep roots in the political history of the Republican Party due to his father.
Right.
And he's gone out and he's become successful as a businessman. He has also been successful governor of Massachusetts. Let's concede that it's successful. We'll hold
but
that.
But, John, we've also
seen Bill Clinton said it was successful.
Okay, fine.
We talked
that's
also
not,
off the
that's
air.
Not the
I mean,
issue.
The paradigm shift as it relates, this is the first election that we have two candidates who have not had military service.
Yeah, but military service has never been essential
yes,
for the presidency.
Yes, it has.
It used to be a big deal.
Yes, it was a very big deal.
FDR never served in the military.
But he was Secretary of the Navy.
No, that's not being in the military. But that's a civilian post.
But the issue of the military up has been a very profound. When you talk about putting your bona fides on the table, a lot of candidates have, both on both parties. I'm not saying right or wrong. We're just having a shift.
Right. Anyway.
In how, well, not anyway.
I mean, I don't see that that's, you
but
know,
but there
really
are also, to let me finish my point,
okay,
if you might,
mm-hmm,
that there are also a lot of business leaders now taking a much more profound interest in politics. We saw it in California with two women. There actually are business women out there under Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman. We've seen it in Rob Johnson in Wisconsin. So we've seen a lot of people coming out of the military in the past have taken a path to politics. But I think the business industry of the whole, so maybe that's to your point.
The guy, the former senator from Massachusetts, from Minnesota, Dayton.
Yeah.
Mark Dayton, governor of...
Let me follow up on that, because I think another thing that's changing in the structure of our economy is that he's not really just a business guy. He's a finance guy,
mm-hmm,
right? And that's the part of the economy where most of the wealth is moving up towards.
And has the dirtiest hands.
Well, so they, you know, what they do is, you know, they're like the leveraged buyout industry, and they make tons and tons of money. And with that money, you know, then you're able to spend it pretty effectively to get in front of the line in politics. So I think... You know, I think Christine's right. There is a paradigm shift that's happening in the long view, if you will. The military is becoming much less of a path to political power. And the finance industry, which is throwing a lot of clout around these days, I think Mitt Romney kind of captures that a guy who, you know, it's not like he built, you know, business with hundreds of workers and, you know.
Dwight Eisenhower, you know, was a
right,
the finest example of the military. And would he have, you know, because of what he did and executed it relates to the war,
right,
where you look at the business community, to your point, have they built wealth? They look at data points and metrics
Romney's leadership is going to come in at. That's where he's going to shine at, because,
yeah,
I mean, I think personally it's going to be a smooth transition to go from the private sector to the public sector. Not saying that you can run a business or government like a business at all, but he figure out the inefficiencies, the waste that goes on in government, so we can move this thing further
and
faster.
If he was a businessman and he was running on a Roosevelt platform, I would say you're right. Roosevelt is the great thing about Roosevelt is he was a traitor to his class. He came from the aristocracy, but he knew the aristocracy, but his administration served on behalf of the common man. Romney was coming from the, you know, finance, the top of the finance industry, and was coming in as a reformer, then I would think he would have a lot
but
of credibility.
But you're assuming that Romney's not going to serve the interests of this country and the interests of the American people.
Yeah,
that's what your assumption is, though.
I'm saying that's his point of view.
That's your point of view because you don't like Republicans and you don't like Romney.
A successful CEO has to safeguard his stockholders first and foremost.
Who are the stockholders here?
The
American people.
The American people, the taxpayers.
Bain Capital?
But to his
No. Wait a minute. In case you,
taxpayers.
In case
oh, I
you
see.
Missed
okay.
it, he isn't with me. You're looking in the rearview mirror again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
you're going to crash into something, and it may call, be called Election Day, because he's now his tax his stockholders now are the taxpayers.
Well, after
and you know what, he wants to do a good job for the taxpayers to make sure that they're getting a fair day's you know, pay for a fair day's work, just like he did when he was the head of Bain Capital.
But,
and if there are things that he runs into in this government that are inefficient, just as he did with Bain Capital, boom, off go their heads.
And Anthony made a really good point. You can't run government like a business, because there are differences in terms of government budgeting and in terms of programs and the public. There are certain things that – but that being said, waste, fraud, and abuse –
We got a full board of lights, and we've got to go to these people. I made that pledge. Let's go to Montgomery, Alabama, where Scott is listening to us on WAPI. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey. Yes, I was listening to the program. There's three things. One, looking at all the swing states, the real question you have to ask is likely voters versus, you know, registered voters. So on likely voters, you go out and you ask people. Everyone who voted for McCain is going to vote for Romney. You ask people who voted for Obama, a lot of the people who voted for Obama are not going to vote for Obama this next time. So you got about 11 you know, key battleground states where it's going to be concentrated, like Florida, Michigan, where Romney's father was governor and was involved with the auto industry. I think he's going to be strong in those states, and I think that the ground game is key. And it is the economy, stupid.
Can I say, I mean, on Michigan, and maybe I'm missing it, but with the clear distinction, I mean, Barack running on saving the auto industry and Romney being very clear against it, I just don't get how Romney can be competitive in Michigan.
I don't. I do not have, I did not put him on as a battleground state, and I think Michigan is lost.
Right.
I didn't put it on my list.
Okay. Got it.
You realize, too, that Michigan or GM is going to need another bailout at this point. I mean, because they're losing money. They're bleeding money at this point, GM is.
I thought they were profitable this year.
They're the number one car maker in the world right now.
Right now, but they're still hemorrhaging.
I mean,
money.
It's an absolute this is an absolute success story for the Obama administration. You should acknowledge that. That is a Democratic victory, no questions asked.
Yeah.
Let's go to Dave in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce, in the panel.
Hi.
Earlier on, you brought up the issue of Bill Rugosa gaveling down or basically not paying attention to the voting that went on about the platform. That kind of procedural abuse that happened at the Democratic convention also happened at the Republican convention, but didn't get nearly as much press coverage. It really happened on a larger scale with controversies over delegates being removed by the Romney operatives and over the rule changes that were going on that were going to make the party much more centrally controlled by the RNC. A lot of grassroots Republicans who were at the convention, I was there in Tampa, were very angry, still very angry. There's now a movement afoot to pass resolutions to have Rents Priebus removed or resign as chairman of the RNC because of what went on the convention. One of the reasons why Romney didn't get a bounce coming out of that convention is that through the grassroots communication network through the Internet, although the media didn't cover it much, people out here are angry with the party and they're angry with Romney.
What were the specific issues, Dave, that upset you personally?
Well, the rule changes basically came down to giving the parties in the states less control over how delegates are selected, basically trying to standardize delegate selection so that every state would tie the number of delegates elected directly to the popular vote, as opposed to allowing this consensual process of caucuses that most states have, where the people who are part of the party, which is very Republican, pick the delegates rather than having the popular vote, which could in many states include just random people off the street who have no particular allegiance to the party, picking the delegates who get selected. Another rule that was very controversial is a rule which is going to allow them, in between conventions, to go back and change the rules, which is something that's never been done before in the Republican Party. Previously, all rule changes had to be done at the convention by the body of the party. Now the RNC has the ability to potentially change rules in between seasons.
Christine, do you think Dave has a point here? Is he?
I think that there was some controversy as it relates to that, but I take a little bit of an opposition to the issue of the rules change. The Democrats for years, and maybe this is, have always allowed for that. I guess the point being, if you're electing your national committee members effectively from your state for representation, there is a rules committee at the RNC. And the opportunity to change the rules between the two conventions now does exist under this Newt, but I don't think that it had anything to do with the bounce or the lack of bounce. That was very inside baseball politics of the Republican National Committee, not of the Mitt Romney campaign. Two different entities happening. The Republican National Committee throws the convention, but it wasn't Mitt Romney's.
10 seconds to Dan Weinberger.
Just a quick follow-up. I've heard, at least on Facebook, some of the Ron Paul people were really mad. They felt they were getting the shaft. Are some of them going
Ron
over
Paul,
to...
Ron Paul,
are they going over to... I've heard some people want to go to Gary Johnson.
The day that Ron Paul people are not upset...
That's what they live
never
for.
Never come.
That's,
that short.
That's their stock and trade.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Before we go too much further, I just want to welcome a lot of new listeners in Central and I guess it would be Eastern Washington, in Kennewick and Richmond and Pasco, California, Washington, a brand new affiliate out there. So if this is the first time you've heard this show, 1-800-723-8289. It's our third station in the great state of Washington, and we hope that you'll give us a call at 1-800-723-8289. Our Republicans tonight, Anthony Anderson here is here. He is with the Republican Precinct Organization. He also is in the criminal justice system, works for in the juvenile justice system. Christine Dudley also joins us, former executive director of the Illinois Republican Party, and also works on projects from the RNC and recently was at the convention, keeping track of Newt Gingrich. Dan Johnson also joins us. He is a lawyer in private practice, but he is also a progressive lobbyist. And you also have a new organization. And tell us about that in 50 words or less.
So our little startup is called Equity Partner Match. And the idea is if you're trying to find a new business partner and you want to be an equity partner, there should be like a dating site where you can find your new spouse, where you can get married. Finding somebody online, you should be able to find somebody with similar values and interests. And that's what we're building at equitypartnermatch.com.
Very good. And John McDonough also joins us. He is the editor of the Encyclopedia of Advertising, which was authored by the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For many years, he worked for the Chicago Tribune, where he was a writer. Also came out of as a copywriter with Leo Burnett, I believe, advertising.
Young and Rubicam.
Young and Rubicam, whatever. Yeah. It was something like that.
But
you were
an
I was a madman. Also very active in making frequent contributions to National Public Radio, and is a sort of a walking encyclopedia of media history. And although we disagree politically, we agree on a lot of media stuff. So it's always good to have John on the broadcast. Let's go to Muncie, Indiana, where Dan is listening to us.
My birthplace.
Muncie, really? Your birthplace?
Absolutely.
Is there a stone there?
Really?
No, that's it. That's at another place.
Yes, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I start on the premise that the Community Reinvestment Act was very contributory to the financial meltdown we had. And I would like to know what our Democrat and Republican friends are going to do about what I see as the gorilla in the room, which are the repayment of student loans and the making of those loans. Are we going to underwrite those loans related to the potential of the borrower and their ability to repay? Are we going to continue to throw dollars at them where some of them are going to have no chance of repaying, just like the mortgages, and we're going to have a crisis? So there's a real problem. How would each party address that? Thank you.
Well, I believe the Democrats want to, they've been at least far more aggressive in talking about it. The president has brought the bully pulpit of the White House behind that issue. He addressed it in his speech last week.
Very.
What's your thought on that?
I think, if you don't mind, John, I think Barack has made it a signature issue maybe 4 or 5 months ago to make sure that the student loan rate stayed reasonable and affordable, and that students wouldn't be forced to pay these high interest rates. And I think in his speech, correct me if I'm wrong, he said we are going to tie your loan repayments towards your income. So that it's something you can manage, because student loan debt, as the caller noted, has absolutely exploded, and it's been a real economic drag on a whole generation.
And there was legislation earlier this year that addressed the issue.
That's a pretty good idea,
which actually was bipartisan in nature, at least for this segment of it. I don't think the full complexity of it has been addressed, but there was the dialogue is going forward in Congress.
And Dave in Arcata, California, listening to us on KGOE. Nice to hear from California tonight.
Yes, pleasure to be on. And to me, so much is so very, very wrong right now with this bureaucracy, our government, that I'd touch on a couple if I might. One is, I believe both of the big political parties, both presidential candidates, are largely in the pocket, owned by very big money, special interests, corporate money. And I think one in particular, Mitt Romney, is totally in the pocket of that small fraction of 1%. That's one thing. And the second, if I might, and that is that I was proud of the Democrats a little bit when they decided that you didn't have to be a believer, that they were willing to take that out. Because I think in a free country, you have a right not only to be a fundamentalist, but you have a right to be a non-believer. And they immediately panicked and put that back in. I hope you're following what I'm saying.
I am. You would have preferred that they not put God back into the platform.
Well, that's...
I believe everybody has a right to be a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or an atheist or an agnostic or whatever believer they are. And non-believers have every much as right as the believers do. And I think they were recognizing that just for a fleeting moment until they thought, the Christians aren't going to like this, and slammed it back in.
Well, your point is absolutely right. People have a right not to be religious or to be whatever religion they want. But I don't think the debate was over whether, you know, the role of God in our society. I think it was more about Jerusalem. And I think the God stuff was kind of a smart, savvy play by the, you know, put it back in there to make it more difficult to vote against. But I think to your first point, I think you're right that Mitt Romney sort of symbolizes the 1%. I think it's hard for you to say, though, that Barack is similarly in the pockets when sort of the signature difference in tax policy is, should we go back to the higher Clinton-era tax rates on the millionaires or not? So it's hard to say. It's just hard to say that he's the same as Romney when there's such a stark difference.
Well, okay, let's assume that Mitt Romney's a part of 1%. Personally, I would like to be a part of 1%, first of all.
Who wouldn't?
And secondly...
That's why I vote Democratic.
Yeah,
that'll get me up there.
But what the caller and you missed out on is the fact that Barack Obama and all the Democrats are in the pockets of big labor. That's not a small point. I mean, you have the NEA. They take in at about $2 billion a year and just union dues. And that's just nationally. Now, you have all these other unions, SEIU, AFL-CIO. Those individual unions take in tons of money. And if you think that the Democrat Party is not an arm of those unions, you're living in another world, because that's how they get their money. That's where their influence comes at.
So I could react. It sounds like you agreed with me that Mitt Romney does sort of capture the 1%
of our society.
Absolutely.
That's not a problem with me, though. I don't mind him. If he has made it to the top, hey, all the best to you. I don't envy what he has done for himself or his family. What I do...
Obama's become a millionaire on the public dole.
What I don't like is the fact that these unions have become so powerful over time simply because it's the taxpayers' money that has pretty much enrich these individuals.
Two quick points on that. One is it's hard to make the case that the teachers' unions are delighted with the Obama administration
right now.
But let me finish. Let me finish my point. Because the Obama administration, through the race to the top, has had more of an impact on forcing more of a merit pay discussion in state legislatures throughout the country than has had in the last 30 years. And teachers' unions right now felt that that was not what they wanted to see. So it's hard to make that case.
But the fact of the matter is they will not be voting Republican anytime soon. So, I mean, it's good for discussion that these unions are having with the administration. But the fact of the matter is they're going to continue to support the Democratic organization, lock and step.
That's exactly what we...
Just like the 1% will support Mitt Romney and others. There's no difference.
When we talked about NAFTA, the point is the unions, even though the White House was doing something they vehemently did not like, and it was a Democrat, and it was being cheerled by Democrats,
right.
The fact is when it came time to punish those people for the next election, nobody got punished.
Nobody got punished.
Well, they continued to write their checks. Michael in Knoxville, Tennessee... Always nice to hear from the volunteer state. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm fine, and how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. The call that I wanted to address, or the issue that I wanted to address, rather, was actually twofold. Number one, I wanted to address the issue of not wanting to have a businessman in office. And while I do understand that the economy and the, you know, the job of the president and as well as the business are two separate things, I feel like one of the main issues that are facing voters today is the balance of our budget. It is simply our economy. And so I don't really see why a businessman who is known and has a record of balancing budgets, I don't see why he would be a poor candidate for the job.
Well, I think the question is, how do you want to balance the budget? And I think just on its face, if you're a balanced budget person, then your choice is Obama has said, look, I want to raise revenue on millionaires or over $250,000. I'm trying to bring in more revenue to balance the budget, right? And I don't think we should be spending another, $500 billion more than what the Pentagon has asked for in defense spending, right? On the other side, Romney has said very clearly, I got a lot of cuts in domestic spending I want to make, but I want to really amp up spending on the military, but I am absolutely vehemently opposed to a single dime in new revenue, right?
To invest in our military?
I think for purposes of creating jobs in our economy, I think investing in our military is one of the worst return on investments.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. I think we should be spending more money on infrastructure, on education, and healthcare.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, I was just saying that I would absolutely agree with that. I think that the issue here is really being clouded by whether or not we want to cut taxes on the top 1% of the nation. I think that the real issue, or what we should really be talking about and thinking about, is the spending that we're doing. I feel like if we would cut inadequate spending and spending that we don't need to be making, then we really wouldn't have to worry about how we're taxing.
The problem is you cannot cut your way out of this economic situation because the vast majority of things are in entitlement programs.
I'll say this much. This is for you, Mr. Johnson. Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice in my book, so we'll leave it at that.
All right. And the question of the 250, I think we should.
Back shortly from Chicago. We're going to look that. Write that down. That's a good line. From East Liverpool, Ohio to Portland, Oregon, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Carl, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I would like to emphasize about something like if Obama gets reelected and so forth, I think, you know, this country's going to be, you know, going to follow Europe's path of decline. And also, I saw something on Investor's Business Daily, I think the weekend edition, like a couple of days ago, saying I can't understand why Clinton has to bow to Obama during the convention, you know, to give him all the utmost support. Despite that these two, and also including Carter, you know, created the so-called the subprime mess that we're in, you know, and, you know, why it seems like why Clinton has got to...
I don't know that.
Because it was obviously they felt that Clinton is still immensely popular with a lot of people, not just Democrats, including independents, and they felt that if you needed a salesman out there, and you've got a product that you can't really talk too much about, you bring out the master salesman, and he'll do a sales job, and he did. He did a wonderful job, and you mentioned not inviting President Bush. I mean, I didn't see anybody inviting Jimmy Carter to this convention either.
Well, they did videos.
He did videos.
Yeah, that's right. So,
but look, we were saying earlier about tax rates, where why $250,000, why 39.6%? Well, that was specifically what it was under Clinton. So I think it's
what does it do in the minutes we have left? For those people that are watching I thought of this during Michelle Obama's speech, and I think Michelle Obama is terrific. I think she's one of the most popular first ladies, and I think I speak very highly of her. But the speech, when I looked at the speech, it was the same speech that she gave 4 years ago, in essence. Mm-hmm. It was Barack and I, we met, we fell in love, we struggled. You know. It was a rehash.
It was too many hallmarks.
It was
way
more,
too many
more of a rehash even than what certainly different than what the president was getting. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm one of the 23 million people who's out of work, or a larger number even if I'm a minority, and I'm living on the South or West Side, and I can't send my kids out because they're about to get shot, it doesn't make any difference that they're in love, that they struggled, that her father, you know, had a difficult time getting dressed and going to work. It's a good story, but how does that help me?
Well, are you saying she should be talking about issues?
I think
policy.
I think she can be talking because you know when you're talking about the people that are out there, everyone was talking about the middle class because everybody wants a slice of the middle class. I'm thinking of the people that are out there that looked to this president to make their life different. And I'm thinking of the people of color who live in the urban areas of America, who don't have jobs. Unemployment amongst black minorities is blacks, young people, is considerably higher than it is amongst the general population. The violence that we know in this city is not unique to this city. It's just sort of it's become a big story and a growing story of survival. And those people, they loved Barack Obama. They voted for Barack Obama. In their heart, they still love Barack Obama. But I'm thinking, if I'm one of those persons and someone says to me, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago after having Barack Obama in the White House, who's really changed their lives not one bit?
That's
in most
not
cases,
fair.
That is fair. Actually,
it's not fair.
I mean,
fair.
You can a person can make a claim.
Well, how has it changed?
A person can make
I'll
a
tell
case
you.
Clearly that no, Obama.
Let me say, without you saying that we're blaming George Bush, because we have to say, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And 4 years ago, the economy was in free fall. We were losing 9% of the GDP.
Here's my point. If you're one of those Americans. And it isn't tens of millions, but if you're one of those Americans, you're talking about the urban areas of the major cities in the major states, some of which are swing states. I'm saying is if you didn't have a job 4 years ago and you don't have a job today and your guy had 4 years to make it better and you're living in a neighborhood where you literally cannot send your children out on the street because they may get killed. And they're going to a school that's a substandard school. I'm wondering, why would they say their life is better today?
All right, I got three answers. One is on your schools, back to the race to the top, the Obama administration has had more success at pushing urban school districts to have a more accountable set of laws and policies than any administration in the last 30 years. On crime, absent the stimulus and the Recovery Act, we would have lost so many more police officers. And for those 2 years that we actually could do some stimulus spending, a lot of cops got hired that helped make neighborhoods safer. What Barack said is, our policies are working, but people legitimately aren't feeling it yet.
But I tell
but
you
I
what,
promise you,
you're absolutely
you
wrong.
Have to let you, us keep working. You and you
absolutely,
will feel
whoa, 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 stop.
Anthony.
You've had 4 years up to this point. If you look at the black community, like they were saying earlier, unemployment amongst black youth has to be around 25-26%. Unemployment amongst average blacks in the community has to be around 14%. The schools are abysmal. Now, you can talk about raise the children and everything else you want to talk about, but the fact of the matter is you can make a strong case to where blacks have gotten – their situations have gotten worse with a black president as opposed to having a white president in there. Their situations, no matter what, the working – where the work – where the school, where the civic terrorism, that's not violence in the South Sides and West Sides. That's civic terrorism.
And you
want to say that just because we hire some cops. Hey, listen, I don't know if you've checked the news lately, but the fact of the matter is Chicago has on average, at least 5 to 10 murders per weekend. And you have about 24 shootings. Now, one can make the assumption that had these individuals had more training with guns, we would have even more killings in the black community. And so no matter what you say the Obama administration has done, they have done absolutely nothing for the black community, period.
On that note, we have to say farewell. It could be another whole 2 hours, but we'll have to do it in a couple of weeks. Our Republicans tonight, Anthony Anderson is the gentleman you just heard speaking. Christine Dudley has been here. Our Democrats, Dan Johnson and John McKenna. Thank you all for being with us this evening. Next week, we will be back with another 2 hours and four great guests. This program's a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.